Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi everyone, Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Glad you could join us again this week for our conversation with Peter Crosby. Peter is an executive leader, has 35 years of experience in the medical device industry, has been a CEO of six different companies in four countries, is an inventor, has 30 patents, and he has served on numerous boards, currently is on the board of five different companies, and serves as an innovative advisor to the University of California, Irvine, their entrepreneurship program, and looking forward to our conversation with Peter today. It's great to have with us this week on our podcast, Peter Crosby. And Peter, we've known each other for several years now, and I'm never sure what time zone that you're going to be in when we connect. I'm sure I've called you in the middle of the night, and today you're joining us from Southwest France, and it's great to have you on our podcast.
Thanks a lot. Nice to be here.
Well, great. Peter, can you first off give us just a little bit of your background, your career? I know you've done a lot of different companies in public and private, as well as a number of international companies that you've worked with. But give us your story.
I've really had three careers, and I'm currently just starting my third one.
Okay.
My training is in engineering. I have an undergraduate degree in electrical engineering from the University of Melbourne in Australia. In case you hadn't guessed, this is not a Brooklyn accent. And then I followed that with a graduate degree in biomedical engineering and graduated in the late 1970s before anyone really knew what biomedical engineering was. Mm. I then spent about 5 years or so working in public hospitals, learning about how hospitals run and how academia runs. It didn't take me long before I realized I wanted to work in business. And I worked for about 15 years in business, predominantly in R&D, making things. And I'm a slow learner because it took me that long to realize that engineering school teaches you how to make things, but doesn't teach you how to make money.
Sure.
I figured out if I wanted to learn how to make money, I better put myself in a position where that was what I was required to do and was going to be judged by. So in the early 90s, I left an engineering career and started off working for startup companies as CEO. And I've been CEO of six medical device companies in four countries, including several public companies. And so I spend about the next 20 years figuring out how to make money as well as make things. Or to be precise, how to build things. Because what I like to do is build products and companies and teams and industries and businesses and syndicates and just build things. And the way I describe my CEO career, I've had two great successes, two modest successes, one sideways and one catastrophe. And you learn from all of them. But surprisingly, perhaps you learn just as much from the catastrophe as you learn from anything else. At the end of 2017, I retired as a full-time CEO and started my third career. It's a planned retirement because I reached the ripe old age of 65. And my third career is trying to help other people build companies and products and teams and syndicates and so on as an advisor or board member or consultant. And I'm now on the board of five companies, two of which are publicly acknowledged on my webpage, and the rest will come out in the passage of time. And I'm enjoying that. I've also taken on a bit of a gig as an innovation advisor at the University of California, Irvine, who has a great entrepreneurship program. And I'm one of several people who helps their young startups get started and figure out what to do with themselves. And that's very exciting, helping young people go through some of the steps that I've already gone through.
Sure. Well, that's... You know, I think with your background and now you're kind of giving back to that next generation, I guess if you were able to go back and talk to your 22-year-old self with all the experience and lessons that you've learned over the years, what are some of the things that you would give advice to yourself if you could?
Yeah. I think the sort of advice that's helpful is different at different stages of your career. Mm-hmm. I think advice that's helpful for young people is be a sponge. Learn as much as you can. There's very little that you will learn today that will not be useful at some time in your career. So never give up the opportunity to learn and keep learning. That's probably the number one advice for young people. And then part of learning is it's all very well to follow the wisdom of others, but it's just as important to follow your own direction. In my experience, there are a lot of very successful people who confuse success with luck. And if you read the books of many successful entrepreneurs from the critical eye of someone who's lived that journey, you realize that more often than not, those stories are as much luck as hard work. Mm-hmm. So don't be afraid of luck. Luck's fantastic, but you can't guarantee it. So you have to work hard as well. And finally, don't be afraid of failure. I think the statistics are that about 90% of companies that start fail within 5 years. And part of the real strength and value of the US entrepreneurial system is that failure is not necessarily punished, but a failure with a valiant effort is often rewarded with the opportunity to succeed next time. Sure. So don't be afraid to fail.
When you look back, you said you learn more from failure than you have from your successes. But what are some of the lessons that you learned in those tough times?
Yeah, well, I'm reminded of the story from Anna Karenina. You know, all happy families are the same. All unhappy families are different in their own way. And every failure is different in its own way. But I think the lessons that one learns from failure is, it's very easy when you're in the middle of a crisis to have narrow vision and focus just on the crisis and forget the big picture. You always have a crisis. If you work in the medical device industry, your products will be recalled often. You're going to get sued often. You're going to have trouble raising money. Your clinical trials are going to not work. Your products will have flaws. Get used to the idea of failure and look at failure as an opportunity to do better next time. Don't be scared of it. I'm not saying one should plan to fail. Mm-hmm. But if you, as they say, if you fail to plan, you will plan to fail.
So tell me, you've built a lot of teams over the years, and you're also an inventor. You have a number of patents, I think, over 30 that you've either have patents or are pending? And
30 issued U.S. patents and a couple of process and foreign equivalents.
So as an inventor, as somebody who has a mind that works that way and you think about building stuff, how do you build teams? What are some of your experiences that you've had as far as in building and what advice would you give somebody putting together their first executive team?
Yeah, good question. A couple of things I've learned over time. Firstly, people rarely grow into a job. So the idea of saying, oh, you know, he's got great potential, he's not quite ready for this job, but let's give it to him anyway, doesn't work. I've never seen it work. In fact, I've seen it the other way around. Get someone who's much better for the job, and that excellent person will drag the rest of the job towards him. Yeah. So probably the best advice is get the best possible people you can and build a team around the skills that you're able to find. Don't try and find a person that you can shoehorn into a job description. Find a person who fits approximately, find out that person's skills, and then fill in the rest.
That's good. Well, what are some of your favorite interview questions as you're interviewing people for different roles? Anything particular that you like to ask?
Often the first question I ask is often the most difficult for the candidate. And the first question is, tell me about yourself. And it's amazing how many people either don't know where to begin with an answer to that question or start telling me, well, I was born in Arkansas and I went to such and such school. No, that's not relevant. Tell me about yourself as it's important to this job. And so asking the question in that way, which is a very open-ended question, I find gives a bit of insight into the way the candidate thinks and what that candidate thinks is important. Because I don't want what I did last summer, the narrative story of, you know, what's happened over the last 10 years. That's not what's important. What's important is, what are you good at? Why do you think you're good at it? Have you learned to be good at it? Tell me about yourself. Very difficult question for many people to answer, but very insightful if you get good answers.
So when you're thinking about, as far as that, those first key roles, sometimes, you know, executives, they feel like they have to hire the full team right away. Have you kind of, how have you thought about as you're putting together that initial team and what's most important to start out with?
Yeah, also a good question. And I think I've gotten better at it over the years. I think one of the mistakes that a first-time CEO often makes is trying to do everything. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the advice I would give to a first-time CEO is figure out the things that you need to do that only you can do and get someone else to do the rest. And often that means that the first hire is someone who's good at operations. The CEO should be focusing on strategy, raising capital, building a syndicate, figuring out how to market, who the strategic partners are, not manufacturing supply chains, not how to put a quality system in, not worrying about how the part numbering system works. Get someone who's good at that and pay them to do it well so you don't have to worry about it. And that really is the insight I also give. When building a team, I think through the various categories of function in an organization, and I like to check off the ones I don't have to worry about. If I can say to myself, you know, I don't have to worry about quality anymore because the person running that is so good, that's one thing I don't have to do. Right. If I can say I don't have to worry about where the money is being spent, they've got a great financial controller, one less thing I have to do. And that maybe feeds into another piece of advice that I'm happy to give to young people. And that is, although a to-do list is important, I think more important is a to-not-do list. Mm. Sometimes it's very important to identify the things that you're not going to spend time on, at least now. Because if you don't do that, it's always tempting to spend time on it. And if you make a decision, I'm not going to spend time on these 10 things, you know what? You've liberated yourself to spend time on the things that are actually more important.
Sure. So you've worked with a lot of investors over the years, putting together the financing for businesses. What advice would you give somebody that's going to be working with either private equity or VC firms, angels? Any advice that you have for somebody going into that? What should they be aware of?
Well, I think the first thing to be aware of is you really have the luxury of choosing your investors. Most companies that start up struggle to raise capital. And if they have four or five people competing to invest, that's great. Then you can get to choose your investors, but that's rare. If you do have that luxury, then some of the most important things are to choose investors who are going to be there for the whole journey, not just the first stop on the railway line. It's too difficult. You want investors that will be with you when you're successful, and when you're not so successful and you need more capital than you thought of. So ask other companies that those investors have invested in, what are they like in the bad times? Can you rely on them?
That's good. So I have to ask you this question. It's not business related, but you're a world traveler and you've lived in a lot of different places. Where's your most favorite place in the world to if you had a day to spend, where would that be?
Probably exactly where I am now. My wife and I bought this place in 2000. She's Danish and I'm Australian and we're living in the US and we had no roots. So we decided, common roots. So we decided to put down roots and we changed our life around. Whereas many people have a home and a holiday house, we decided to have a home and a workhouse. Because knowing that I was going to work in the medical device industry, I had to be flexible enough to go where the opportunities presented themselves. And it's really difficult to move home. It's really easy to move house.
Right, right.
So by having a home and a workhouse, it gave us the freedom to choose opportunities because we always had a home. Sure. And while we've lived here in France, we've actually also lived in workhouses in three other countries and six other cities.
Yeah, well, I know you're in California part of the time, and in Southwest France, and you said you're an hour away from Bordeaux, so you're in a good spot.
Yes, indeed, we're about an hour from Bordeaux, about 20 minutes from the foie gras capital of France, about 25 minutes from Cognac, and about 30 minutes from the truffle capital of France. It's not awful.
you can just enjoy where you're at for sure. Give me some books that you've read maybe recently or a long time ago that you think would be good for an executive to have and to digest. Anything come to mind?
Yes, and I think the books that are relevant also depends on the stage of your career. The books that you find interesting when you're starting out may not be the same as the books you find interesting when you're reflecting on 40 years of career. One book that I read early in my life that was actually recommended to me by my supervisor in my master's program, it was written in 1908, and it's by a professor of Latin at Cambridge University called Fred Cornford, and it's called Microcosmographica Academia, which is Latin for the little world of the academic. It's actually available publicly. You can download it as a PDF in multiple sources. It's a small book that you can read in about an hour and a half. But what's interesting about it, it was originally written as a satire on academic politics, but it's turned out over history in multiple reprints to be a tremendous primer on organizational politics of any organization. And one of the types of characters in there is called the young man in the hurry. And the young man in a hurry knows exactly what he wants, and that's everything. And he knows when he wants it, and that's now. And I would recommend that anyone starting on his career or even mid-career find this book, download it, and read it. And after reading it, you will identify the types of people that he talks about in your environment and in yourself. It's a fantastic book.
Well, that's one I have not heard of and definitely will download it. It sounds very interesting. Give me just some parting advice. Anything else that you think would be helpful for somebody in their career? Again, if they're a mid-career or early on in their journey.
Probably the single piece of advice I'll give to a CEO is, although it is lonely at the top, and I know that's an awful cliche, you don't have to be alone. Reach out for help, ask people for advice. There are lots and lots of people who are willing to help you, because particularly those who have been a CEO like me, who know exactly how lonely it is in your position. Reach out and ask. You'd be surprised at how many people are happy to help for absolutely nothing just because they want to help.
Yep. Well, Peter, you've been that for me, and I've called you a number of times to ask questions, and you've always been free to give your advice, and definitely appreciate that over the years, and wish you continued success in your third career as you're helping others and businesses grow and prosper. So wish you the best.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.